It's time now for Minnesota Reads here on 103.3 KUMD. This week, we're talking about an absolutely fascinating book that maybe you wouldn't on the surface think, oh, got to grab that off the shelf. It's the newest bestseller. But once you start, you can't put the darn thing down. It's called 10 Plants That Changed Minnesota, and it's co-authored by Susan Price, who joins us on the phone this morning. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Lisa, it's so nice for you to call. I like that introduction. Something nice, something you might just see and pick off the shelf and say, this is the hottest thing going. But once you get reading, you are fascinated, I think.
You really are. So how did you pick the 10 plants that changed Minnesota? And maybe if we can even back up a step for the germination of the idea in the first place.
Of course. Well, Mary Meyer, who's a professor at the University of Minnesota, realized that a lot of people don't, I mean, we see plants, but we don't think about them. And so she wanted people to get an idea how important they have been in Minnesota's history. So with the Arboretum, Minnesota Landscape Arboretum, they had sort of invited people all over Minnesota to name plants and to describe why they thought they were important. And they got over 500 entries. So then they assembled a committee of 10 people who were, experts in the field, horticulturists and nursery people, and they looked at those and thought about their history and their economy in Minnesota, their ecological spot, and their spiritual sense to Minnesota. And that's how they came up with the 10.
Fantastic. And it's a wonderful list. We're going to give away the list, okay? We're going to blow that one wide open because there's plenty of exciting things in the book that folks can learn about these. White pine, wild rice, soybeans, alfalfa, apples, corn, lawn, wheat, American elm, white pine. Wait a minute. White pine's on there twice. Oh, I looked at something else. And also purple loosestrife.
Right.
Now, is purple loosestrife a weed? I mean, invasive? My grandpa used to say anything's a weed that's growing in the wrong spot.
That's true for purple loosestrife. Well, we all thought it was great, I guess, when it first came to America. It's, you know, it does well in Europe because there are predators, beetles and so forth, that keep it in check. But once it was brought here, it was introduced, it just went wild in all of our waterways. And people brought it purposely, but also it was brought accidentally in the ballast of a ship and would be dropped on the shore of America. So the problem is that it is beautiful, and people want it in our yards, and it blooms a long time. But it just crowds out all the native vegetation and the nesting place for the native birds and frogs and so forth.
So when you assembled the list, one of the things that we talk about up here quite a lot, and I think people are starting to talk about in different settings, is the idea of native plants.
Yes.
And the importance of native plants. Well, there are some plants, obviously, on this list that aren't native.
Correct.
Does that make a difference?
Does that make a difference? That's very interesting. The thing that I found out that didn't realize was that American elm is native. I mean, there are a number of plants, as you say, that are native on the list. But they can be cut down, too. Like white pine is native, but it didn't give it any special strength once we started clear-cutting the forest, you know, and found out how useful it was to building things. But you're right, things like corn and soybeans, they didn't originate here, and they have to. Corn, I found out, if people didn't plant it every year, it would die out over time. Unlike purple loosestrife, which can move through the waters, corn needs human beings. Isn't that interesting to keep it going?
I was just thinking, my cousin has a little granddaughter who's maybe a year old, and to read that 1 acre of soybeans can be made into 82,000 crayons,
you would like that, wouldn't
makes
you?
Him the coolest grandpa ever.
Well, soybeans can just be made in all sorts of things, you know, paint, and that's why it's planted. It's so useful. You can eat it, and you can feed it to the animals, and then you can make all these different things with it. So it's been very good economically for Minnesota.
Now, let's talk a little bit about lawn.
Yes.
Because lawn, again, is one of the things that up here, we have a variety of gardening programs here,
right.
And we talk about alternatives to
yes.
lawn a lot, and we also talk about the sorts of things that we have to put on our lawns, or feel we have to put on our lawns, to make them just ever so gorgeous and green and uniform and golf course-y, that kind of thing. How did lawn make the list?
Well, because it is such a huge business. And because there are so many. I mean, if you just look at the economic impact of it, it is, as you say, everybody has in the town or a city feels that they have to have a lawn. And it after World War II, when all those chemicals became available to us, then we thought it had to be a perfect lawn. Before that, human beings have liked lawns, it seems like, almost forever. And the reason is, they didn't call them a lawn, but they wanted a clear space between their house and the forest, say, or the prairie, so they could see if anything was coming. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
But as we got the technology, then we didn't just want it, you know, cut down every few months or so. Well, it had to be cut every week. And then, not only that, well, we didn't want that clover and all that. But it's funny, if you look back in the gardening books in Minnesota in the 1940s, they recommended planting clover in the garden because that does give it nitrogen. So we've just changed over time what we think is important about a garden. And now we did point out alternatives in the book about lawns, and we do hope that people make more sensible choices when they're planting.
Well, yeah, there's always that person who's going to want to have nothing but purple loosestrife.
Yeah.
There's always that person in every neighborhood. So people now, they get excited about the book. They grab the book. They read the book.
Yes.
What kind of a takeaway do you want? Do you want what kind of, what
well,
do you hope
several.
That people know, do, think, believe, act after having enjoyed this book?
Oh, that's a good question. One thing, of course, we hope that they realize that plants are important in our lives. You know, they're not something that we just don't see, but we'll look and we'll see that elm tree and think about it. Or we'll see the white pines when we go north and understand why there aren't as many as there used to be. And we hope then people begin to realize that monocultures are not so wonderful. That is all one plant, but we need diversity in the landscape. And we need to care for our landscapes so that they remain for our children and grandchildren. Because there were many lumber people who came in and, you know, cut down the lumber because we needed it for homes. But then people came and began to realize we need to set aside some of those lands, too. And so, therefore, we have Chippewa Forest and the Superior National Forest. So there have been people all along that realized it was important to save those things. And we hope that's what comes through. The other thing that I think is funny is to think of some of the people that were involved in this. I don't know if you had a chance to read Wheat, but the millers were so secret about their processes of grinding wheat, and they would sneak into each other's mills and sort of look and see what was the secret that made it better. So there's some funny things in the book, too, that I hope people will enjoy.
Well, Susan, it is a delightful read, and thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Susan Price is the co-author of a book called 10 Plants That Changed Minnesota. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.